From the Emerald City off the Pacific Ocean, Seattle, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM, broadcasting live from the studios of KVI. I'll tell you a little bit later on tonight about my incredible trip here in Seattle. But happy birthday to my father, Gabe. He's in Detroit, 85 years old. My gosh, time flies. Happy birthday, Dad. Love you. While the West has been rocking lately, and it has nothing to do with loud guitar music, several earthquakes have struck the region this week, including two more Friday near the California-Mexico border. You know, we just had Jim Berklin on, the geologist, talking about earthquakes. The first quake struck in an area about 16 miles south of Mexicali, a Mexican border town. That was 4.7. The second quake, that was a 4.1, hit in 3 minutes later near San Diego. That comes on the heels of a magnitude 5 that hit 21 miles southeast of Mexicali. So I'm telling you, Southern California is due for a big one. Up to a foot of snow interrupted what had been a mild winter in much of the Northeast and created havoc for travelers, forcing the cancellation of more than 1,100 flights in the New York area alone. The roads were slick throughout the region, and there were hundreds of accidents, but New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg urged people to look on the bright side. Look on the bright side? This is what he said. The timing is perfect. If you think about it, we'll have the whole weekend to clean up the mess. Well, I guess he's right about that. People with very low cholesterol levels seem to be at an increased risk of developing stomach cancer. That according to a Japanese study now. And also, they say heavy cell phone use may be linked to an increased risk of cancer of the saliva gland, which is the disease that movie reviewer Roger Ebert has. A study of 500 people in Israel who developed that kind of cancer, where cell phones are used much more than in other parts of the world, shows that they all talk on cell phones for several hours a day. A desperate husband who learned a hospital was about to take his comatose wife off life support managed to awaken her, doing the one thing that he knew she hated, being told off. Yvonne Sullivan, 28 years old, an English seaside resort town there, suffered a severe blood poisoning during childbirth in July. The baby named Clinton died after the 14-hour later, but the husband was able to revive his wife. Amazing. If you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the feature story. It's the Baby Ray's alien smile. This is an incredible picture. Visitors to an English aquarium are being greeted by an eerie, alien-looking, smiling face. People have likened the baby Thornback Ray's distinctive face to the last human featured on Doctor Who. It does. Looks just like him. In a moment, roving reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us. Aerial symbols, unidentified craft over Dublin and Stephenville, Texas. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're live in Seattle at KVI 570 on the AM dial. Fascinating night in store for you tonight. Lots of Linda Moulton Howe reports and lots of phone calls from you throughout the evening here while we're in Seattle. Linda Moulton Howe, of course, as you know, Emmy Award-winning television producer, investigative reporter, and an author. She goes right to those stories, and she's got many for us right now. Linda, how are you?
Well, thanks, George. In fact, I was down in Texas January 29th to February 1st to see some of the videotapes for myself and interview some of those eyewitnesses down there. And I don't think a lot of people realize that phenomena has been ongoing up through at least February 10th. And this is now a story that began in New Year's Day, January 1st, going into February 10th, and it has involved literally maybe 40 eyewitnesses now, and there are several videotapes and still images, and later on in the program, I'm going to talk about infrared videotape that is quite fascinating, and one of the videotapes was taken by a man near the Stephenville Municipal Airport on January 19th, starting around 10 o'clock in the evening. And this is videotape that ended up being shown on the Fox Network News, Corpus Christi, several news stations. And it was showing pulsing symbols. And before then, on New Year's Day, a report that I had done in last month's Coast was about Ricky Sorrell's New Year's Day sunset sighting of that huge metallic structure embedded with cone-shaped holes, and it blotted out the sky above him while he was deer hunting. And having been down there and walked the trees with him, I now understand why he said that judging from the tree-lined sky that you could see to the far, as far as you could to the right and the left, that it was about 3 football field lengths long, which is about 1,000 feet, is really huge. And I also learned while I was there that a police officer saw a very similar huge craft with embedded holes, and I have a drawing of that and several other illustrations, photographs, diagrams, maps, all sorts of things at my news website, earthfiles.com. And it is a series now of about 7 reports of all this high strangeness in Texas. And I have hot links from the headlines page to all these in-depth reports with these photos and drawings and maps that I think would be very valuable for the Coast audience to see.
Super, Linda.
Now, a key figure in gathering information about all of this unidentified aerial craft activity from both citizens and several police officers who remain anonymous is 43-year-old Leroy Gayton. Leroy is the Erath County Constable in Precinct 2 at the courthouse annex in Dublin. Leroy has been constable about 4 years and a police officer for 17 years. And not only is he investigating, he and his son were eyewitnesses themselves to remarkable aerial lights on January 8th. And then on February 2nd, between 2:50 and 4 a.m. Central Time, Leroy videotaped a disc-like object that looked like, he said, quote, a spinning sun or Jupiter planet throwing off colored strobe light. What was so odd about it was when I zoomed in, meaning his camera, mm-hmm. It looked like a triangle or pyramid inside of the spinning disc, unquote. And that videotape has still not been released to the public. 1 week later, on February 9th, Constable Gayton saw that same spinning aerial object again. And he called his wife. She grabbed their digital photograph, still camera, and photographed more odd pulsing lights in the sky. And that night, the event started when Leroy received a call around 10:30 p.m. from a man who was looking through his telescope from a home between Dublin and Stephenville. And here's what happened.
All right.
I'm at Stephenville working a security job, and I see the damn thing again. I see it south towards Dublin. It just looks like an object that's spinning and hovering. Well, that's February the 9th, okay?
Right.
February the 9th, that evening at 10:30, I get a phone call from a guy who tells me, he says, hey, Leroy, that light's back up in the sky. It's southeast of your house. He said, I'm watching it through my telescope. Anyway, I bought my wife a pretty nice camera, and we saw it. It was traveling southeast towards the little town of Gustine, G-U-S-T-I-N-E. We get in the car and drive about 15 miles, and my wife takes some pictures. Did you see that video that David Corrine had?
The projected symbols?
Yeah, I have they were bouncing around.
Yep.
That's what this is on the pictures. They're green, yellow, white, red, and blue, doing some funky things in the sky.
And this is on February
the 9th at about 10:30. My wife took pictures.
They look like colored hieroglyphs?
Yes. You know, it's just like what David had. It's just like you're watching the video and you put it on pause. Exactly what his video is doing, that's what this thing's doing in my photos. But anyway, it ain't over yet, okay? This is about at 10:30 at night, about 11:30. I've been earlier at my sister's house, and I'm telling her about it. She lives in town, and they can see this light from town, and they're all freaking out. Anyway, 11:30, we kind of lost sight of it where we were at, but they could still see it from town. Well, we come into town. The same guy that called me about the first one calls me again. He said, hey, Leroy, there's a second one. He said, it's coming in from around the Selden area, coming towards Dublin. And sure enough, there's another one, same thing.
Projecting these symbols.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, at one time, we can see both of them in the sky. One of them's in the southeast. The other one's at the northeast sky. We take pictures of it also. And there are several witnesses, my sister, her husband, my niece, their neighbor. We still don't know what this is.
Right.
Okay, that's February the 9th. February the 10th, Sunday, I had to come up here to Dallas, and I forgot my cell phone. The next day, I check it, and it's the same guy calling me back about 8:30. Left a message saying, Leroy, you're not going to believe this, but there's five of those lights flying around the Dublin area. The guy tells me with his telescope.
Right.
He said he could see like a capsule on top and one on bottom of this round thing. He said, and it's spinning around. He said, it's bouncing around the sky.
Is he in the Dublin area or the Stephenville area or?
Between Dublin and Stephenville somewhere. But I promised him that I would not release anything at all with him. And these pictures are really odd. You know what they look like? Remember there used to be a little thing called Light Bright or something, a little toy where you put these little plastic pegs and it would light up different colors? That's what it looked like.
In addition to the mysterious symbols projected into the night skies by spinning discs, one of the strangest sky dramas was witnessed by three men on January 8th. That's the night that dozens of eyewitnesses reported seeing strange combinations of flashing lights in the sky. Everyone said the lights were either on a single huge craft or were in a rigid formation. All agreed that the lights pulsed on and off, but randomly and not together. The earliest high strangeness that night began around 6:10 p.m. in Selden, Texas. 50-year-old Steve Allen is owner, president, and CEO of L&S Enterprises in Texas Freight, a trucking and transportation brokerage company in Glenrose. Steve has also been a civilian pilot since the late 1970s when he learned to fly. As the sun was near setting, Steve traveled from his Glenrose office to a hill in nearby Selden to sit by a campfire and relax before dark with two friends. Steve said the sun was still about halfway above the horizon when four extremely bright white lights in a rectangular pattern came speeding in the clear, cloudless sky in total silence.
It seemed like it was traveling at a very high rate of speed. My initial estimates was between 2,000 and 3,000 miles an hour. It was gradually slowing down as we saw it. It came into range 15 to 20 miles away. By the time it got even with us, it was traveling a normal aircraft speed, probably anywhere around the 200 to 300 mile an hour range. It looked like it was traveling at about 2,500 to 3,000 foot above ground level, and it was approximately 1/2 mile north of our location. So that put it within a mile of where we was at. As it went past us, that's when the show started. The lights in the rear, we could see the two corner lights, what we presumed to be the corner lights. As it came past us, there became more lights in the rear. I think there was either 7 or 8. And it went on to Stephenville, which is about 3 more miles into town is the way the bird flies.
You had four lights in four corners making a rectangle perhaps a mile long and a half mile wide.
Right. They was flashing.
Where did these other five lights appear in the rear?
That's after it went past us. That's when we could see the rear of whatever it was, or after it came from dead even with us and it went past us is when we noticed the rest of the lights. They was equally spaced apart in this half mile distance across. They was exactly level with each other, exactly horizontal. They also was very bright, appeared like the same lights as of all the four corner lights. They was flashing in no particular form. You know, one would flash and the other one, you know, there was no rhythm or pattern to it whatsoever. As it traveled past us, it was gradually slowing down. it gets to what we thought was the edge of Stephenville. It came to a complete stop. It hadn't changed altitude any. It was still at the 2,500 to 3,000 foot altitude. The lights in the rear reconfigured to an arch going upward, more like a football turned sideways. That lasted for 3 or 4 seconds. Then the light suddenly appeared into a vertical. It was the horizontal, then it went to a bow, and then it went to a vertical. Then about 2 or 3 seconds later, there became two sets of these seven lights, both vertical. They appeared to be about a quarter to a half a mile apart, and they was all flashing like they had normally done. And then 2 or 3 more seconds, it turned to a flame. And it looked like the flame was kind of contained into a rectangular shape, about 50 yards wide and about 150 yards tall. And it was a real light white-colored fire. It looked like it was contained in a rectangle box because of its outline of the fire, but there was two sets of it. Each one of these vertical scenarios turned into a flame job. Everything had about a 2 or 3 second delay to it, like the arch, and then it went to a vertical scenario and they was flashing, and then about 3 seconds later it had two sets of vertical seven lights, and then 2 or 3 seconds later it went to the fire, and then 2 or 3 seconds it was gone completely. It was probably 50 yards wide and 150 yards tall, contained in two rectangle boxes, and it was just like it was something biblical, and it was just right there. It wasn't way out in space where, you know, you see things zipping around. This was very up close and personal. After this happened, we stood there and talked about it for 2 or 3 minutes. What the hell could this have been? Blah, blah, blah. And here it comes, and it looked to be a little bit lower than it was the first time. It had the two lights in the front as it come past us. You could see the two lights in the front. You could also see two giant round orbs, is what I would describe it as, come by, and there was a real bright glowing red. Inside each orb, there's two of them in the rear, had a white light like the original first ones we saw. And then within about 3 to 4 seconds, here comes two F-16s in pursuit, chasing them, the same direction, same heading, same altitude, but they wasn't doing a very good job of catching it. And we watched it until it went out of sight, probably 20 or 25 miles going east.
Were the jets still in pursuit?
Yes, they did have their afterburners on. Several pilot buddies of mine that lives further to the east heard the sound barrier break, a double sound barrier. So obviously somebody had to authorize excessive speed to, you know, because breaking the sound barrier is illegal. Plus this thing was at 2,000, 2,500 foot. Very unusual to have military jets in our area flying that fast. Well, I saw what I saw, hell or high water, I guess you could say. I've had several strange phone calls from different people that they were sure educated and knowledgeable. They didn't identify themselves. They just said, be careful, I'm being watched. What I say and do will be carefully scrutinized, and I could be in danger.
And police officers in Stephenville and Dublin have also seen several highly strange aerial phenomena that have changed shape, have gone from a horizontal to a vertical before their eyes, gigantic 1,000-foot diameter. And these police officers are afraid to speak publicly because they are afraid of losing their jobs. The constable told me that there has been, he had heard, sort of maybe as a rumor is the category, that they were concerned that someone in the military wanted to come and take a look at a police car dash camera videotape that shows a pulsing disc, like with red lights, that turns, George, into something that looks like a jellyfish.
Amazing.
In the sky for minutes. We're talking about a 16-minute videotape. This object keeps changing shape. And these are some of the hard eyewitness videotapes and accounts by law officers in the Dublin-Stephenville area. And when we come back, I have talked with the reporter, Angela Joyner, about what happened at the newspaper and her own research into all of this high strangeness.
All right, Linda, that's a major story. If you need more information on Linda Moulton Howe, you just go to her website, earthfiles.com. Simple as that. She's got all kinds of information on that website. And if you need to email me, that's George at coasttocoastam.com. as well. Just fire away. We'll be back in a moment. Special night tonight with Linda Moulton Howe. A number of reports, and we're going to keep the phone lines open sometime next hour for the rest of the night with Linda, and I'll be back. And what a great time. You know, we were coming out here for the Psychic Spectrum Expo, but it was canceled. They're going to do it again the end of October, November, so we'll come back. But, you know, I said, you know what? I'm still going to Seattle. There are a lot of people out there that listen to our number one rated show on KVI, and we want to come out to Seattle. So I did, and I've got to tell you, the station folks here had a bash for Seattle listeners that was second to none. And I had a great time. We just got done with it about an hour or so ago. And here I am now. But I'm glad I came out here. We'll be back in several more months. And I'll be back in just a moment with Linda Moulton Howe. We'll open up the phone lines later on tonight as well to give you an opportunity to sound off about some of these stories that Linda's reporting on today. Back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Linda Moulton Howe with us tonight. Linda, this Stephenville story, how would you compare it to the Phoenix Light story?
This is more complicated in a strange way, in the sense that I have been studying some of the symbol images, and they are multi-layered, three-dimensional, very complex, very segmented. I have never seen anything like it, meaning intricate segments of different color. The March 13th, 1997 flyover, the most astounding part of it was the two-mile-long triangle in the early part of the evening. Now, clearly, that is really something. And then the lights in the rest of the evening on March 13th, 1997 were only that. They could only be seen as lights in the arcs, or the lights that were coming from northern Arizona down, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
In Texas, there are all of these strange segmented symbols. There is the astonishing metallic surface with embedded holes that Ricky Sorrell saw. There are the multiple flashing lights that turned into huge rectangles of fiery flame. And in the next half hour, I'm going to talk to you about infrared videotape that I've seen with my own eyes. It's absolutely astonishing, but it's on the ground. Right now, we're in the air. And what has been happening in all this high strangeness in Texas provoked constant phone calls and emails to Angela Joyner at the Stephenville Empire Tribune. And she wanted to stay on the UFO report story, but the newspaper management told her to move on to other local stories. She was overwhelmed by the stress of conflicting priorities. And on Friday, February 1st, Angela submitted her two-week resignation notice. But the newspaper editor and publisher told her to leave on Thursday, February 7th, after only a week of her notification. And I talked with Angela about what she was facing prior to February 1st, 2008.
And at the time, I was the only full-time reporter at the paper. And it's a very small newspaper. This is a small town.
Yes, I remember seeing a population sign when I was there at about 15,000.
That's right. The magnitude of the story drained the resources that the newspaper had. I mean, everybody pitched in and tried to help out, but there was hundreds of calls and so many emails. You know, we did have very good paper sales through the month of January, but 1 month of good sales doesn't really add more people to your staff. Eventually, it was a lot for me. It was a lot for that paper when I was asked to not report anymore on UFO things. I was still getting lots of phone calls and emails, and so I tried to direct those to after hours and to my home computer. Anyway, I just ended up putting in my notice. Sometimes, you know, you try to please everybody, and what happens is you don't please anybody.
So on the issue of was Angela fired or did she resign, could you explain that in your own terms? What led up to your submitting your resignation?
I turned in my resignation when I realized my employer was unhappy with my performance, or at least that was my view. And so a week later, I go in, and they're very upset with me. I don't really know what happened, but they had taken my computer and my Rolodex. I think they were overwhelmed also, and they asked me to leave, and so I did. It was quite an emotional day for me.
Had somebody come to you to say, don't report any more about the UFO activity here because?
Well, the editor and publisher felt our readership had just grown tired of the stories. They just felt it was time to move on to a new topic.
But it seemed to me when I was there from the 29th of January that there was, in fact, more intense interest.
Yes, and judging from the phone calls and the emails. So they just felt that I wasn't following their directions. I guess because I just didn't drop it entirely. I'm not sure. It's just hard to explain.
Mm-hmm. Now, Steve Allen, Ricky Sorrells, Leroy Gayton, police officers that remain unnamed, all described having phone calls intimidating them or trying to persuade them that something military and natural was going on, and they felt like pressure was being put on them individually. Do you think it's possible that some authority in our government was putting pressure on the publisher of the Stephenville newspaper?
No, I don't think that at all. I don't believe anybody military contacted them. I think if that had been the case, they would have pulled me aside and said, this is what's happened. I just believe it was in their judgment that enough of the UFO stuff and let's go on. And I just thought it might be the best thing at the time would be just to end the relationship.
So you were doing this on your own volition?
Yes. Nobody threatened me. Nobody contacted me like anyone that I thought was military or anything like that asking me to drop the stories. That did not happen. I didn't want to give up the investigations on the UFOs. I didn't want to abandon those witnesses. I tried to honor their wishes by directing that attention to after hours and to my home. Apparently, that wasn't the right thing to do in their eyes. I just really think the whole thing's just unfortunate.
What are you going to do next, do you think?
I wish I knew. I've already done some freelance things. Steve Allen had already begun a website.
I'm curious if you have seen anything highly unusual in the sky yourself.
No, I have not. And I do look up at the sky a lot more now. I'm more observant, but the way that it has turned the witnesses, just rocked their world, turned their world upside down, I'm not sure I want to see it.
The video that impressed me the most in terms of an aerial object, the projection of the symbols that David Caron took near the Stephenville airport.
Yes, I interviewed him. I saw that video also. I've never seen anything like that. I was really impressed with that video. It's really not explainable, I don't believe. When I talked with David, he even showed me, here's how I put the camera up against the pole on my French porch to try to keep it steady. And he seemed completely amazed by it also. I watched it all the way through two times. It was just unusual to see lights dance around like that in the sky. One of them said, it looks like hieroglyphics. And I thought, yeah, it does. I thought it was unusual, too, because the thing doesn't just, like, curve. It makes 90-degree angles, 40-degree angles, and then it'll have curvy spots in it.
And with all those different colors, almost striped and speckled.
Right. And, you know, and it was so brilliantly colored. I mean, just very intense, bright colors that I really couldn't decide. Is this something moving and it's streaking like that? Or is this actually just what you see? I mean, can you not keep up with it with your naked eye? I really don't know.
Mm-hmm. It appears to be projections every 15 frames, which is a half a second. Every half a second, each of those hieroglyphs or symbols is changing to a new one.
Yes, it is sort of a pulsating effect.
I talked with Leroy Gayton. His wife has taken photographs that appear to be the same thing. They look like the symbols and have all of those multiple colors in them.
Yes, I've seen his pictures. They do look the same.
I got an aviation map of restricted areas around the Glenrose, Stephenville, Dublin region. And here is this big white circle of the Bush Crawford compound in the middle. And the compound is not more than 60 miles away from most of the sites where these phenomena have been seen and or videotaped or photographed. Have you had anybody speculate or suggest to you that whatever it is could be flaunting itself because of the Crawford Ranch Bush administration proximity?
Well, more than flaunting itself, not really going in that direction, but I have had comments on the two F-16s that Steve Allen saw that appeared to be in pursuit of the thing that came over him the second time. And some people are speculating that the object crossed the Crawford airspace, which is the reason those jets scrambled after it. Other than that, I don't have any more information.
And it's clear to everyone, including pilots, what a phony excuse that was days after January 8th for the military to try to be blaming all of the dozens of eyewitnesses from January 1st, starting into late January, on 10 F-16s in a two-hour period between 6 and 8, only on January 8th.
When I did the first story, I immediately began making phone calls to the bases that I thought would be relevant. And that's when I got in touch with Major Lewis at the Naval Air Station in Fort Worth, and it used to be called Carswell Air Force Base. He was very nice and said, let me see what I can find out for you if we did have jets in the area. Because I was relating the story of the two F-16s in pursuit of the object, according to Steve Allen. And he did call me back the next day and say, there could have been jets from some other base, but they weren't ours. Then the next thing I know is 2 weeks later, I'm getting a call for a radio interview about the Air Force backtracking on their statement. And that was the first I had heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't send me the press release, and he didn't call me, so I called him. His demeanor had absolutely changed, and it was quite clear that he was probably reading something over the phone to me. I feel like possibly maybe he was reprimanded because he would just say, Miss Joyner, at this time, all I can say is, and he would read.
Your point is that when you first called him soon after the January 8th evening where so many people saw all the lights and started calling you at the newspaper on the next day, that you were able to talk with this naval officer and to talk in a conversational way about what could be happening.
Right. He was just a regular guy, real friendly, very congenial, and it would be just like me talking to you.
But by the third week in January or thereabouts, he was very stiff, very formal, and was only reading to you a prepared statement on the phone.
That's what it sounded like. I think he was reading and he was a lot more cautious.
Did you say, sir, off the record, could you tell me what kind of pressure have you had from higher authorities to shut this story up?
I did try to go in that direction, but he would still just say, Miss Joyner, all I can say is this. So I could see that something had changed. He certainly wasn't the same guy that I had spoken with a couple of weeks before.
And Angela Joyner is talking about Major Carl Lewis, a spokesman for the 301st Fighter Wing at the Joint Reserve Base Naval Air Station in Fort Worth. Major Lewis originally told Angela Joyner that, quote, no F-16s or other aircraft from his base were in the area the night of January 8th when most people reported the sighting, unquote. Angela also learned that officials at the region's two Air Force bases in Abilene and in Wichita Falls said they did not have any aircraft in the Dublin and Stephenville, Texas area the first week of January 2008. Tonight, on Coast, I am happy to report, George, that as of Tuesday, February 19th this week, Angela has been hired by KCUB FM 98.5 radio in Stephenville, and she emailed me this quote, still in the planning stages, but will be early morning. Probably won't begin on air until next week, which is February 25th to the 29th. I just started Tuesday. One segment will be community events, announcements, and one will be straight news for the local community, unquote. And she is writing for a brand new website that Steve Allen started that is called www.stephenvillelights.com. So she's going to try now to keep whatever news is occurring going, perhaps in a segment on the radio on KCUB and at StephenvilleLights.com.
What do you think of her, Linda? Do you think she should have gone to the mat like she did and lose her newspaper job?
Well, it's a hard call when a situation is uncomfortable. It's a very small town. And she felt like she wanted to keep answering the emails and the phones, and I completely understand her position. And the newspaper, for whatever reason, management wanted her to move on and not be reporting. I guess that's the part that she and I do not understand, that this was national news and then international news. And you would think that the Stephenville newspaper would be honoring the fact that they had all this phenomena occurring, mysterious and unanswered as it is and was, but that this was great for their newspaper sales. So why would they want Angela to stop reporting? She doesn't understand it, and I don't.
I wonder if somebody at the paper was threatened in some form or fashion, and it scared them.
Well, that's why I asked her that question, and she feels strongly that if that had occurred, that somebody in the newspaper would have come to her, and she knows the community and she knows those people. So the way it all went down, it was uncomfortable for her, and she wanted to keep going in the direction of what was happening with all these mysterious lights and reports, and you can see how difficult that would be if you are working for someone who's paying your check and they're saying move on, you don't want to. But you're working for them, and that is the straitjacket she found herself in, and that's why she resigned. And it may be that it's all going to work out for the best, because she's now going to be expanding her reporting into radio, and who knows what more might unfold in that region. And StephenvilleLights.com is a website that did not exist before this, and now she's writing for that as well.
So she's going to go into the story full-time almost.
In a way, she's going to have to do other local news,
sure.
But now she has more freedom, and I think that is the right direction for any reporter.
Okay, next hour, Linda will be back with us as we talk about these three-dimensional symbol flashing technologies. She'll be able to update us also on these infrared.
Exactly.
Incredible story there, Linda. And then later on, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll have somewhat open lines in conversation with Linda at the same time, okay? Linda Moulton Howe. She'll be back with us in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And let me also tell you, if you need to email me, that's George at coasttocoastam.com. I'll be getting back on a plane early tomorrow morning, heading back for Los Angeles. So we'll be right back in the LA studios for you on Monday. We'll be back.